let's have a call to order of the Beautification Environmental Advisory Committee for the month of August. Yes?
Yes.
It is August.
Right.
Yes.
I got that right. Okay, let's have the Pledge of Allegiance for us. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic of America, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Okay, roll call from my far, far left.
Joanna Selkovitz here.
John Capgar.
Ken Jones here.
Jeffrey Seib here.
Glenn Partlow, and our usual guest, Mr. Butler, and
Brian Matthews.
Brian Matthews,
City of Palm Coast.
Utility specialist, environmentalist extraordinaire.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
Okay.
We'll be the judge of that.
And regarding the minutes of the last meeting, do we have any comments? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion to accept the minutes from the last meeting.
Make a motion to accept.
Mr. Jones makes the motion.
I'll second it.
John says yes. For the second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Okay, first order of business is the Hewlett Swamp Wellfield area. It's a environmental discussion. I've got some handouts here. Of course, we've got the map up there, too. To familiarize you where this area is. And we've got Brian here to kind of explain it, because this is not an area I'm very familiar with. So, Jeffrey, I think you were the one that kind of wanted to put this on the agenda, right?
Yes, I was kind of surprised when I saw that the Wellfield was on the city council agenda for, prospective drilling for new wells in that area. And so I'm fairly familiar with that. That was on, I guess, last week's or the agenda. And
yep.
I was wondering, what I'm concerned about is any impact on the Hewlett Swamp wetland. I think as a tributary of the Pelliser Creek, I think it should be under the same protection as Pelliser Creek, shouldn't it, as a filtering environment? And so what, if you can...
Let me help. First of all, let me clarify what appears to be some confusion. First of all, the wellfield drilling that was on the city council agenda does not exist in this area. That's in the south zone wellfield. Let me show you where that is. That's down here. This is south of Route 100.
Oh.
The Wellfield Improvement Program for Water Plant Number 2. You see this right here, Water Plant Number 2?
Yeah.
Right there.
It's on Citation.
Right there on Citation, about 12 miles south of here. We have a wellfield down there that's drilled into the upper Florida aquifer. We have 8 wells. We are endeavoring in this region over here to drill 4 more wells, one of which, and then one additional well is already drilled, equipping 5 wells and piping it into the existing raw water collection pipe to add a total of 5 more wells to the 8 that exist in this area, south of Route 100. It actually has really nothing to do with Hewlett Swamp whatsoever.
Okay,
so when I saw the email from Denise, I then was confused, because I wondered what well drilling activity could he possibly be talking about, since this is the well drilling activity. Now, to your question, I should speak. Down here, these green areas, and the map itself in this particular file, okay, proposed monitoring wetlands location map. You see that? It says that right there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Because this is a brand new wetlands monitoring plan, which coincidentally was initiated and approved by council exactly at the same time as this South Sung Wellfield drilling process. And what happens is you'll see that the Water Management District and I negotiated 2 years ago when we had the permit opened to add these four new wells. The permit was open, and the district, in evaluating the permit, said, you know what? You have had an existing wetland monitoring program in place for 15 years. It involves 15 wells that monitor wetlands in the north, central, and south zone of Palm Coast. And what it does is it really looks at our production zone of our well fields. And it looks to see how those well field production zones interact with the surface waters or wetlands. They determined that the wetland program could be enhanced. It could be modified. And so what they did was, and what we did together, if you will, with our consultants, continuing services, environmental consultants, myself and the Water Management District, we developed this plan. And this plan is rather extensive, and for the environmental engineer to put this plan into place will cost the city $100,000. For the wells, and this is where I thought you were going with it, ironically, the wells that have to be drilled as a function of this plan are another $50,000. And they, in fact, will be drilled throughout the community, and I'll show you that in the map in a minute. But this is the plan here, and most certainly, if any of you are interested to see these different monitoring locations, these are actually specific wetlands that we went to with the Water Management District professionals to determine which wetland locations would be most impacted by our withdrawals of water from the aquifer. And in doing so, we're putting in this extensive wetland monitoring program. Over the next 5 years, we're going to take a real hard look, in addition to what we're already doing, at all kinds of different wetland conditions. And what we're hoping for is that this additional data provides the district with enough comfort that says we're properly managing our aquifer systems, not over-pumping, and thereby not having a negative impact on the wetlands. Okay? Because in another 5 to 7 years, I'm going to need more water. And when I go to the district to do that modeling to get that more water, this is critically important to have that information under our belts. And this is a forevermore program. This doesn't go away in 5 years. We're going to do a baseline monitoring report by December of 2016, which evaluates all this stuff that's contained in this plan. And right now I'm going to take you down and show you the wetland maps, the wells, locations that are going to be installed between now and December of next year. And then we're going to have this big report that's going to say, okay, here's what we did, here's what we found, here's what we expect, and here's the pumping conditions of our well fields. And as we go forward, every year there's certain monitoring requirements that we'll actually take a look at how our the interaction between our well field production and that wetland's health.
You're doing the next baseline, you're saying, in December of 2016.
And then
is there a current baseline that you're using before the new wells?
Yes, actually. We have a wetland monitoring program in place that actually began in 1990. Okay. So now it's, that would be 15 and 10 is 25 years. Wow. And that encompasses 15 wells, 5 in the north zone, 5 in the south zone, 5 in the mid zone.
Okay, so when we put in the new wells, we have a baseline that we can look at to see what the impact would be.
Here's the key on that very point. What we're doing is we're actually adding wells, but we're not asking for more water.
Ah.
So not increasing allocation in this particular case means that I have more wells to produce fewer gallons per well. Therefore, they'll actually lessen the impact. That's the plan. Okay, so now, here's those maps. Okay. If you take a look, see the, in this inset, see the north well field up here, south zone well, here's Route 100, right in here. Here's Matanzas Woods. Let me get my little light going here. Here's Matanzas Woods. Uh-huh. Here's that swamp, Hewlett Swamp you're making reference to.
Yes.
We have existing wells. See these other, these are already existing monitoring wells that you're looking at here, all these little dots. We have production wells along US 1 that have been there since the mid-80s.
Seen them, yeah. That's what
now, if you go down to the south zone, below Route 100, down here, these green areas represent wetlands. That's the water plant number two right there. And then these are existing. See these are wetlands existing, and there's wells throughout those that are currently in place. There's five wells. This year, by December of this year, here's the plan. The South Zone Monitoring Well Program will be in place, hopefully, but if things go well, they just approved it, by December of this year. We plan to put that plan into place. By December of next year, we have the North Zone up here to put into place. And the combined wetland monitoring plan base program report will cover all of that installation and our initial findings based on the current production. So, yes, we put in, we've had for years and years, see this string of wells right in here? SW 35, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 41, 42. Those are actual production wells. Those are wells into the confined superficial aquifer, and they produce anywhere from 100 to 200 gallons per minute each. This area, which is known as Palm Coast Park, is owned by Holdings, Palm Coast Holdings. That, at one time, was a wetland. And then we had the fires. It burnt it all out. And what happened was is that they came back in and they smoothed it out, so they didn't really disrupt the wetlands, the forest fires did. And so now the wetland areas that are confined within this area, we're looking to monitor, and we will be putting in monitoring wells throughout. Over here are additional wells. These are all feeding water plant 3. See water plant 3? Up in here. That's what those wells do. These wells here feed water plant 1, which is way down over here. That's on Corporate Drive North. So we have 3 water plants. We have 2 separate well fields. The South Zone Water Plant 2 well field is the upper Floridan aquifer, consists currently of 8 wells, will in the future consist of 5 additional wells. And then I should tell you, in 2017 through 19, we're going to put in the remaining 4 wells. That's a follow-on. Again, I probably will not look to increase allocation in the South Zone until 2018 to 2019. And that will be based on this wetland monitoring picture and underground hydraulic modeling to see what the safe yield is or what we can do without having negative surface impacts. That's really what the term is. On the North Zone, these are upper confined superficial aquifers. This is not the Florida. Now, you may, if you were paying attention to the, council meeting, we also went for something called an APT. Aquifer performance test. Since we're talking wells, you want the whole picture. Up here, way up here, can I get it on the screen?
You can see here.
There you go. Way up the top, 128 and 126. So it's way up in this region. It's just outside the picture. There's 2 additional production wells. And what we're going to do is use those as monitoring wells, and we're going to install 2 aquifer performance test wells into the upper Floridan aquifer on the north end of town. Here's the big difference. The south end, the aquifer, the Floridan aquifer, is fresh water. The north end up here, it's brackish water. And we built Water Plant 3 as a low-pressure reverse osmosis plant and plan to use that brackish upper Floridan water for its source. At the time we built the plant, the Water Management District did not have a model for us to model the withdrawal of the water. And so they said, you know what, we'll give you fresh water allocation until we have a model developed. They now have a model developed. So we're going to go for an APT, an aquifer performance test, which basically pumps the aquifer over the course of time, and we measure the pressure decrease in the aquifer. It tells us how much lower the aquifer goes. Have any of you heard of something called a cone of depression?
Yes.
Basically, when you pump the water down, yes. Here's the resident water in the aquifer. But right where you're locally pumping it from, you have a little bit of a dip. It's called a cone of depression. We want to see what the cone of depression is, and how fast the water moves towards that cone will lessen the slope. The lesser the slope, the less impact there is above and below, and therefore we have what's called a sufficient specific capacity, that's gallons per minute per foot of drawdown, so that we can build and operate a well field there without having wetland impacts or wet surface impacts. That's our goal, is not to impact the entire Rainier Forest and all the wetlands that are associated with it. Now, to help offset that, to offset any potential impacts, the new wastewater plant, which we just, the other day, we workshopped, agreeing to put the application in for a DEP loan to build a wastewater treatment plant, the waters that are going to be advanced wastewater treated water will go to Hewlett Swamp as a potential outfall location. And what happens is, not only does it act as a flow-through treatment basin, as you've already described, but we will be rehydrating that swamp with that effluent from that plant. And we're hoping that it's slow enough travel that we get some percolation into the aquifer, what we call indirect recharge from that. So you see, it's like a full circle. It's called the hydrological cycle. We take water out, we use it, we put it back, we take water out, we use it, we put it back. And that's what the goal is. So, yes, I've just given you in 15 minutes a whole bunch of information, but what we're trying to help you understand is that, yes, we have production well fields, we have saltwater monitoring wells, we have wetland monitoring wells, we have a very extensive monitoring program to make sure that we're protecting the environment in Palm Coast. Because it doesn't do any of us. I've lived here since 1979. I've got grandchildren here. And I want to have a place for them to live. But I also want to have water for them to drink. So there's that balance. It's always a balance. And that's what we try and maintain. So can I entertain any more questions?
Yes.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, part of Plantation Bay, which is part of Flagler County, mm-hmm. has some severe water problems over there.
Yes and no.
Okay.
But go ahead.
And I thought that they were talking to the city of Palm Coast about drilling a new well down there. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next question.
First, we don't really have anything to do with Plantation. Yes, if they drill wells, they'll have to make sure they don't impact our well field.
Okay.
We're an existing legal user. The district, the Water Management District, will not allow them to drill a well if they feel that model says, oh, you're going to impact the well field in Palm Coast. They won't be allowed to drill it. They have some water quality issues, but not a lot. Where the big problem is in their treatment plant. It's almost non-existent. It's ancient. It hasn't been invested in. It hasn't been maintained for many, 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 many years. And so the poor folks who are trying to operate this thing are, you know, you talk about bubble gum and chicken water. I mean, they're trying to make this thing work as best they can. And yes, they have some water quality issues, which if somebody were to throw enough money at it, they could repair quite readily. But their water quality in the ground is virtually identical to our water quality in the ground. We have extensive treatment in all three of our water treatment plants for that reason. And that's what allows us to deliver, you know, award-winning water to your home. In Plantation Bay, not so much.
Is that like
now, you're talking about Palm Coast Plantation, though.
No. Plantation Bay.
Oh, you said, okay.
Yes, no, Plantation Bay. Part of it is in Volusia County.
Yes.
Right.
And part of it is in Flagler County.
Yep.
But they've been having water problems down there, and people complaining about the taste
of
the water, and
yep.
it's yellow and brown and all that kind of good
all
stuff.
All those same organics that we take and treat out of our water here are not treated out of the water there, because
okay.
their treatment practice is not functioning properly. They're working, believe me. I know the folks that are trying to make it work. I know their boss. I know the budget. they're doing their darndest. But, you know, I mean, again, you know, you're trying to get water out of a rock. I mean, it's you know, I hate to throw them, I'm not throwing them under the bus, don't get me wrong. It's just that they have a lot of problems and they don't have a lot of money to fix those problems with.
Is that similar to what happened at Beverly Beach? Did they have a problem with
They had a wastewater plant issue.
Yeah, wastewater.
And we're now going to, we're taking their wastewater. And they never really had a water system per se, although they are interconnected with us as a consecutive system, and they receive our water. Okay. And, you know, keep in mind that many, many, many small hamlets and towns and villages throughout the entire country, much less Florida, have very, very similar issues. They're underfunded, and the water quality below them is not as perfect as it might otherwise be.
I have a question that wasn't really what we brought you in for, but just because you're here, maybe. Has there been any further talk about a desalination water treatment off of the beach or the water?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. At one time, not long ago, in 2004, 2005, we had a Flagler County water supply plant being built with all the entities in Flagler County. And it was being basically managed or administered, I should say, by the Water Management District, whose goal it is to make sure that we grow in a managed sense as it relates to water supply and source. And we investigated a whole bunch of different source possibilities. And the one that fell out as being the most expensive, for sure, but by the same token, a drought-proof solution was not to go west, but to go east. And we came up with the Coquina Coast Desalination Project. So, and in 2008, 2009, 2010, we investigated that. We had a couple phases. We initially determined, do we do a ship-based? If any of you have ever spent any time on a boat, you still drink water while you're on the boat. Well, how did it get there? They didn't bring it on board. They have a machine that's in the boat that makes seawater into drinking water. And this has been done for many, many years. So we had a choice. We could very quickly bring a boat offshore and treat seawater offshore and deliver it into what would end up having to be a rather large tank farm of stored fresh water, because we were going to provide many entities, including outside of Flagler County, with this seawater. Okay? Problem was is that if you have a storm, like we're facing a potential storm coming up, The Coast Guard would make that ship weigh anchor and head out to sea and not return until it was safe. Well, what are we doing in the meantime with drinking water? That's where the stored water in the tank farm comes in. So that adds a huge extra cost. And then, the entities that were involved are pretty far away, a big distribution system, water quality issues relative to that, and what quality are they willing to pay for? A lot of issues in that regard. So phase one was a determination. Do we want a fixed land-based facility or a ship-based facility? We determined based on sustainability and because of the storm potentials. And you remember the storm potential in 04 and 05, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't fun around here or anywhere in Florida. So we said, you know what, let's do a land-based and it'll have to be a hardened facility to accommodate storm conditions. That's what phase one did. Phase two was, okay, how big, how much money, what are all the moving parts and pieces? So phase two, year, which was another year, we came up with a lot of that stuff. And then things kind of died off. We didn't need it anymore. We didn't need that extra water like right now. And an RO plant that you're discussing takes at least 10 years to get from I'm thinking about it to I got to drink a glass of water out of it. At least 10 years. That facility was initially going to be a 25 million gallon a day facility, which means you're treating basically 50 million gallons a day of ocean water to get 25 million gallons a day of fresh water. We were talking in the $500 million range. I don't think there's enough population to support that cost of that few gallons. See, as big a gallon as it sounds like, it's just bottom up. So what we have done today, where does that fit us today? We still we, that's still on the books. I mean, we're still thinking about it. And if this APT, the aquifer performance test, doesn't pan out, there's no aquifer water for me to have at a 3, 4, 5 million gallon a day range. If I can't get any more fresh water, maybe a couple million gallons a day, we're going to have to rethink the whole Coquina Coast thing. Maybe on a smaller scale, for fewer people, fewer gallons, smaller equipment, and technology has moved forward a little bit. My goal is to put that seawater plant out in our future, if possible, to 2035 and beyond, based on need and demand. My thinking then is technology will be such that some of the problems, the costs, will be more reasonable. Palatable, maybe is a better word. But that all depends on what we do with our tools. If the wastewater that's going into Hewlett Swamp can be eventually be redirected to more indirect potable recharge over there at the well field, by the, behind the wastewater plant to the west, and I can get a million, 2 million gallons of fresh water out of that aquifer that I can't get now because there's no wastewater plant putting it into it, that's one possibility. And I analogize it to council at the meeting the other day this way. It's very simple. We have 80,000 people here today. We drink 7.5 million gallons a day of water. We are conserving water at a fairly good rate. We're at less than 100 gallons a day per person, which is really good. It's more like 90, which is really good. It wasn't 10 years ago. We were at 150 gallons a day. And we've instituted and implemented different practices that have helped us manage the water, the use of water better. That said, let's jump forward a little bit. Okay, when are we going to have a doubling of population? When will it be 160,000? 2035? 2040? That's our guess. And we all know that the further out I guess, the bigger the guess it is. So, but our projections right now show about 150 to 160,000 people in the 2040 time zone. Now, that said, that's a doubling of, if we don't do any more conservation, if we use the same 7.5 million gallons a day and we double the population, we're now going to be up to 15 million gallons a day of water need demand. We currently have an allocation for 11 million. We don't have enough wells in the ground physically to take 11 million gallons a day, every single day. We can do it on a 1 or 2 day basis, of course, but not on an everyday basis. But that's, with time, we'll have more wells. Hence the South Zone Wellfield Improvement Project as an example. That said, if we going forward need 15 million at 160,000, and I don't think that's going to be Palm Coast built up. I think that's going to be a substantial amount of people, but I see us at 200,000 or better down, way down the road. So 15 million is, at least for me, a good number to shoot for. How do I get there? Well, I have to put more wells in the ground. I have an 11 million gallon day allocation. I need four more at least to get me to 2035. A couple of fresh, a couple of brackish gets me there just. But I need it every single day. So I really need about 20, 22 million on an allocation basis to get 15 every day. So you can start to see how the numbers exaggerate themselves a little bit. Where's all that water going to come from? Some of it's going to be a wastewater recharge capability. Some of it's going to be stormwater recharge capability. We have this massive freshwater stormwater system that collects stormwater throughout Palm Coast and promptly takes it and puts it into Graham Swamp, which promptly sheet flows it through the environment out into the intercoastal, where it becomes salt water. We are going to propose over the next couple, 3 years to model the stormwater system so that there's a possibility. Remember, that stormwater is part of the aquifer system. It just happens to be that you can see it. There's no more dirt over it. And so there's a hydraulic interface between the groundwater and the surface water. If we can hold back a couple, 3 inches of surface water, that's a, close to a billion gallons of groundwater, which I might have some access to. Now, at one time, we did what was called a canalysis back in 2005 during that period when we were studying Flagler County's water supply. We looked at back pumping, taking pumps and physically pumping water from this canal into that well field. The problem is we don't own the property. Somebody else does. They're not going to necessarily let me pump water on their property. The district tried doing that in South Florida, and they got sued, and they lost. So we're not going to do that. But instead of letting the water leave underground as stormwater, let's see, is there a way to hold it back and not flood anybody? You know, we have Freeboard. You know, the stormwater crew has some advanced mathematics that look at Freeboard and look at how many inches exist between a surface water canal, the storm coming, and your house. And they let the water out. They can do it automatically now with computers and stuff. So we now are in a better position to manage our stormwater. So stormwater might be in our future. And of course, it all gets treated just like it is being treated today through these advanced treatment plants. We're very fortunate that we have the technologies in place that we've put into place over the last 30 years. So stormwater, wastewater, a little bit of brackish water, a little bit more fresh water out of the ground. Maybe that's going to get me where I need to be for 2035, 2040. It's at least a talking plan. It's not, you know, we don't have budget for it yet, but I plan to. That's where I'd like to see us go in the long term.
I know Brian needs to be somewhere. But
yeah, I'm sorry. I really apologize.
I just have one quick question. The wetland monitoring, what are some of the aspects of that? Is it looking for decline in the water table or the vegetation?
The species of vegetation. We look at the soils. We look at the water lines. We look at the type of vegetation at different locations within the wetlands. We define the wetland edge. And wetlands, you know, contrary to the name, wetlands do go dry. As part of a normal hydric cycle, they will be dry periods and there'll be wet periods. If a wetlands is underwater all the time, it's not necessarily a good thing. Because a lot of the species that like it dry don't live there when it's wet, etc. So you have these cycles, and what our goal is to not disrupt that cycle. That's really what it is. So that's why we monitor it. You don't look at it for 90 days. You know, you have to look at it for a long period of time. And then you take a look at the health, the overall health of the wetlands. We do annual photographic monitoring. We have photo stations set up at each of the wetlands, and we take angular pictures throughout, big photographic thing. And we take a look at the health of the vegetation. We look at species. We look at lichen. We have cores where we take the samples down 24 inches, and we see what type of geologies are existing. What is the soil makeup? And that's how we establish the overall health of the wetland. Anything else I can? I've taken you way past the. What are we doing at Hewlett Swamp?
No, that's good though.
Thank you.
Very, very good.
And somewhat related to this whole thing is something that I've been working on is revising our renewing our consumptive use permit for landscape irrigation. So it's due in November, and we're getting close to that. We've modified some of our pumping systems where we're going to reuse water now. The main sources of water that we use are surface water, which is from our canals and drainage areas, wells, and reuse water. So we're taking some of those that are on the wells and the reuse now, and wells and the surface water, and converting them to reuse. So even though we're maybe irrigating more area, because you notice we've been landscaping more, we're doing more work on Belterre, we're doing some work on 100, but the net effect is less from the aquifers and stormwaters because we're using more reuse. Almost all the new stuff we're going to now is on the reuse. So
recycling on wastewater is very important.
Very yeah.
Good.
Yes. Folks, have a nice evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I gave a few of you my business cards,
yes.
And unfortunately I only have one more.
That's right.
It's up for auction.
Brian, do we need to collect these back up? I mean, is... The issue with the wells, it's kind of a
water system.
Thing.
A water system is considered a national asset, and because of the terrorism activities and homeland security today, we typically, while it's public record on one hand, we make it as difficult as we can make it so that you don't have access to it. Why?
Yeah.
Because it can be, I'll give you a quick example. There's a contractor that was doing work in another utility, not us, and his whole truck is full of blueprints of the whole utility system. Well, guess what got stolen? His truck.
Yeah.
Who's got the blueprints now? Who has access to all the vulnerabilities within that utility system? Mm. So we try and guard them. So guard them through life.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you very much.
It was very
excellent.
Bill, a quick question. Is the city of Palm Coast going to try to get more conservation land so they can have areas to put wells in?
Are we trying to buy more conservation land?
Mm-hmm.
Not presently, no.
Okay.
We just annexed all that land out to the west, too, so we have more property out there, and that's where a lot of these wells are, out to the western side. So, according to Brian, we've got enough to last us for quite a while.
Okay.
Well, my only comment is we're all drawing this water from the same aquifer.
Yep. Well, that's the reason why I look more at the desalination plant idea, because at least
over and over, and at least in my opinion, a desalination plant, that's a pretty exotic enterprise to entertain.
It is.
And you're going to pile a whole bunch of salt into the ocean. That's not the least bit normal.
Well, not really.
Yeah, that's the byproduct.
You look at, there's a whole rash of Caribbean islands that already do this, and they sell the byproduct as salt. On the market. So.
Sea salt.
Yeah, sea salt.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's nice for them, but I
I
just see a whole bunch of salt being dumped in the ocean. But I don't know enough about that to make a concern. And the only thing that wasn't really addressed is this is based on grow, more houses, more people, and we will do anything to get more water. And when is somebody going to say, well, we have grown enough?
That's not going to happen. I mean, as long as
before 2040.
Yeah. As long as there's going to be land available and someone can buy it and build a
full
house on it,
I understand that reality.
Right.
But the same token, when you're in your house and you're living on your own little water cycle in your home, sometimes you say, well, we're not going to do this because it's not enough water to do that. We're not going to irrigate this much, and that's what I see in Palm Coast, is just more houses, more people, and we will do anything to get more water.
Well, if you live up north like I did, most of the property up there is quite large, half an acre plus. We always lived on 2 acres of land. And you come down here, and the land is like a postage stamp, and maybe that's what the city ought to consider, instead of having all these postage stamp areas, making it, you need more land to put your houses on, so you have far less homes, and you'll need far less schools.
It might be too late.
It's too late. It's all flattened out.
But that was just, that's my hydrologic cycle. I took a lot of hydro classes in college, and the cone of depression interferes with another cone of depression, and if you lower the cone of depression too much, the salt water comes in, and you have to have another plant to get rid of those pollutants. And it's a never-ending cycle of spending money to have more water. It's nice that we're having all these other little procedures to save water by reusing it and making
right. And that's another thing that you're talking about up north. A lot of the water up north comes from reservoirs, doesn't it?
Right, it does.
It doesn't come from the drilling in the aquifer.
No, it doesn't.
New York City's water supply comes from upstate New York. Giant reservoirs that pump it all down.
It's kind of like Brian was saying, damming up and saving some of that water.
Yeah,
right?
Stormwater
running. Looking at those kind of things.
Yeah, well, that's something.
That's my
big bodies of water like that. We got a bunch of little bodies of water.
We have a little of it, and they would go fast because 7 million gallons a day is a lot of water.
I can just picture him trying to say, well, we're not going to have any more housing projects for 8 years until we can gather up enough water.
Look at California, they're having problems with water.
Of course. When did they decide that they had a problem? Only when it got to the critical stage. That's right.
Too late. That's the problem.
Okay, let's, we're going to move the agenda to discussion of cell towers on the Palm Coast Parkway corridor.
That's something that Jeff had brought up last time.
Anything about that?
I gave you all the ordinance that was recently passed on that, and it basically added language in there for wireless communication facilities. And basically the setbacks are the same. And they did add in section F, wireless communication facilities and equipment compounds shall have the same setback requirements as the zoning district in which they are located, but no less than 10 feet, and shall have the minimum distance of 150 feet from all off-site residential zone property, residential dwelling unit, and rights of way of Palm Coast Parkway, Belter Parkway, Belter Boulevard, and Old Kings Road. So they have a few more setbacks then.
What I didn't see, though, is a new height requirement or limit to those
towers.
To the towers.
Yeah, it talked about that built under the building height, you know.
Well, that's what I didn't see.
The maximum height for building height is 50 feet,
right,
except for wireless communication facilities.
Right, and it didn't mention anything that I saw that showed any height limitations on 630
those. 632.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Honestly, I don't know either. I was looking through that stuff too, and I'm not the expert on this or anything. I know Sarah Lockhart is here in the audience, and she probably wanted to kind of chime in on this. I know we had the public participation section last, but I thought if she wants to talk about, let's involve her too. And she does have a good knowledge of this. She's done a lot of research.
They'll throw me under the bus. I guess, am I supposed to be over here?
You can be anywhere you like. We can hear you.
Sarah Lockhart, full disclosure, at one time I worked with the city, or for the city of Palm Coast. I'm here technically tonight, though, as conservation chair for Flagler Audubon Society. And I provided the staff with guidance from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service when this was going through the process, because U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is in charge of administering the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And if you look at the statistics, cell towers are detrimental to bird migration and cause a lot of bird mortality rates. So some of the things that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service came out with are guide towers, meaning the big ones with all the guide wires. Those are the worst for migratory birds. Lighting requirements. The birds seem to be attracted, especially in fog, to red lights, interestingly enough, so they get caught in this continuous loop and exhaust themselves and then perish. So I think there were about 10 different items that I provided to staff to consider when the towers come in for application, although I don't know why that might not have been included. But the other thing that I wanted to talk to the staff, I'm sorry Constance isn't here tonight, something that's occurring in the county, and by the way, this ordinance that the staff modified was for the Palm Coast Parkway. The cell tower ordinance that the city has is still intact, and it's a pretty good ordinance because they have to demonstrate that there are no other options available, that their tower has to be built, and you have to go through a process to show that it can be located on a city tower. So there is some ability to reduce the number of towers that might otherwise occur. But one thing I wanted to discuss with the staff and possibly encourage is that the staff work in concert with the other jurisdictions, because I got a feeling the cell tower companies have a plan. And the reason I say that is because when I was still in the city, there was a cell tower being proposed in Grand Haven, and they were going to disguise it as a stealth tower, and then that went away, and they wanted to be in Waterfront Park, and I think Bill pointed out, well, no, we can't do that because of the deed and the way that that property was dedicated. You can't build a cell tower in Waterfront Park. So then they came across the street, across Colbert Lane, to Grand Swamp. And the tower went from 80 feet in Grand Haven to 100 feet in Waterfront to 153 feet in Grand Swamp. Now, that is one tower builder, and cell phone companies never build their own towers. These are all privately owned and operated towers, and they lease out the space to the cell companies.
Oh, I see.
And then the what has happened recently is that Flagler County has entertained applications for cell towers, one off of Old Kings Road in an area called Hammock Beach, I think it was, or Hammock, Hammock something, that again built or had approved but never built years ago. There was a fire station site dedicated, and the county has accepted a cell tower application on that property that would be 320 feet in height. So kind of my question is, I think we need the one in Grand Swamp if they're going to build that one. So I was going to encourage the staff to get together with the staff of the county to see if we could come up with either a map that said, okay, not here, here, or here because of the way land was dedicated for public use, and not here, here, and here because of environmental sensitivities. And by the way, we've had people ask us here, here, and here, what have they asked you? And see if there are some possible co-locations that occur, could occur. And again, this is going to get a little sticky perhaps because we've got two different tower builders who are in town. I think RJ Tower is interested in Palm Coast. That's who seemed to be working on the one off of Colbert Lane. And I think it's NextGen that's in Flagler County that has submitted like five different tower applications. Yes, we have gaps in coverage. Yes, they're a necessary evil, but you know there are things that we can do to make them a little more palatable perhaps over time. So thank you for your consideration.
I have a question. Along Palm Coast Parkway, we get frequently, as you're probably aware, ospreys that make nests in the trees. Do they make nests in towers? And two, does these tower companies or people tear them down as a result?
Well, technically, yes, they do. And yes, there was actually an osprey nest. I think it's there now, this year. It's kind of cycles in and out. There's one at the Daytona State College.
Yeah, that's it.
And we actually monitored it to determine when the birds had fledged and were off the nest. That's when you can technically take down the nest. Interestingly enough, bald eagles they never seem to go for anything other than a nice stately tree of some kind. You can fool ospreys, you can fool the ducks, you can fool the songbirds, not the eagles. But I was reading online where in Miami, the first bald eagle nest in since 1987 in on the east side of the Everglades. And they're in a cell tower. how odd is that? So, you know, who knows? But, yes.
I saw a bald eagle on the top of a dead tree at the Palm Harbor Golf Course 2 weeks ago.
Really?
It wasn't a nest. He was just at the very top of it, just looking around.
Surveying the kingdom.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, there is an eagle's nest in Grand Haven.
Yes.
And if they built a cell tower on Colbert, will that affect the eagles?
Well, there is a radius that we would have to, and that's part of that mapping process that I was talking about earlier, because I think at one time we had like 8 or 10 bald eagle nests in Flagler County. There's some out west. There's quite a few, interestingly enough, along the intercoastal waterway, because I think the fishing might be pretty good, or at least I've seen them get fish from the ospreys. So there's some stealing that was going on, but we have a lot of bald eagle nests, in my opinion, especially along the intercoastal waterway. There's one up in Creekside Golf Course has one.
Right.
So it's kind of like we kind of need to pull all that information together to see, okay, where does it make sense for these towers to either stay away from these areas or, you know, so far we don't have anything here in this box that appears to be problematic. But there is guidance out there from U.S. Fish and Wildlife that specifies how far they're supposed to be from the bald eagle nests. Do you recall, Jeffrey, from what you read, do you recall the number?
I don't recall that. This is from Bald Eagle Nest.
Okay.
But there was a distance away from any environmentally sensitive areas. So
right, because wetlands are another attractor of birds, and so, you know, that's another issue as far as wetlands, cell towers adjacent to wetlands. So we can have our work cut out for us.
But this ordinance, that as I read it, it's more for just the siting of the towers. It really doesn't say anything about how the towers will be constructed.
No, that's in a separate, like
see, that's what I think the concern of mine is, and I think it's the Audubon also, is, you know, how these towers are going to be built. The height, the guide wires.
Yeah,
and the lighting, these
yeah.
are so important. These are the things that are the killers. They're the things that result in the bird mortality. So I would hope that there would be some consideration of that.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Basically, our code doesn't allow the cut cables. It has to be something that doesn't really look like a cell tower. Basically, it can be a flagpole.
Yeah.
It can be a clock tower. Or built into the structure of a building, you know, some way to kind of make it look less obtrusive.
Yeah.
The lighting issue, I don't know that we've addressed that.
That's an important issue.
And the ideas on
that have changed. It used to be that the red blinking light was okay. Just solid lights were no good. But from what I'm reading now, it's that the red lights are no good, no matter what they're doing. They blinking white light is what they're proposing. Is that correct?
I think so. I think that's what I've read so far. It's kind of been an evolving issue, because the guidance came out like in 2012, and then there's guidance again in 2013, and guidance again in 2014 from the Fish and Wildlife Service. So I would hope that the city would maintain currency and stick with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service guidance.
With the two companies building cell towers, is there any prediction about how many would be required to flag it?
That's a very interesting question, and I don't know the answer to that. But it seems to me that if you look, there are maps that show gaps in coverage. So
I have one in my house.
I used to have to stand out in my front yard, but now
everybody in my street
stay
says
inside.
That.
So it seems to me that they know where that is, and they would know how to plug those gaps. So I know that they know what they want to do, and it's just kind of getting them to share that information, I think.
Bill, is there any way that either we can go to some place or you could bring it to know what the other rules for the city is on cell towers? Because you're saying that whatever isn't in this ordinance basically goes back to the original rules that we're using.
I can have Irene send that out to you.
Okay, I think that would be interesting
just
to see.
Just makes a note.
Because that was my first thing is, well, geez, there's nothing about the height in here, but if that's, you know,
right.
other things are covered in the original
I thought
one.
The item of concern was the locations.
Yeah, well,
and
yeah, I
so
agree.
I didn't really delve into that too deeply.
Yeah, that's certainly a big part of it too, obviously, the locations.
Yeah.
But I just kind of like to know what the other rules are, just so I can kind of look at
things. 300 feet is kind of exciting.
Yeah.
My drone can go 300 feet.
Yeah. So can mine.
It
usually does when
it goes out of range
control.
At 200.
That's right, yeah. I just got to say it goes out of control.
I saw a YouTube thing last week where a drone
thank you very much.
Eagle.
Thank you.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
It had a camera on it, it was flying, the eagle was coming right at it, and if we run into it.
Oh, my. Oh, no.
And I still have one with the
thank you, Sarah.
Birds of prey took the drone out.
Yeah.
But how about that, huh?
I want to hear about
how. All right, I'll get that sent out, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks.
I just got a quick comment about the city of Palm Coast and their expansion.
Are you talking about the new issue?
Toronto, Ontario, and Vancouver, British Columbia. They had all this land all over the place, right? So they decided to build mansions on it. The Canadian people couldn't afford them. All the land is owned by Asian people, and there are no businesses will move in that area because they can't hire people to live there because they don't have the money to live there. All they were thinking about when they thought about the plan was, look, all the tax revenue we're going to have. Yeah. And that's something I think sometimes cities forget, that somebody's got to pay this tax revenue. So a guy, the average price of a house in the Toronto area in Vancouver is $25 million. Yeah. How many people, even wealthy people, could afford?
Portland's having that problem,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, before you grow, make sure that the people you want to grow with can afford to live here.
Yeah. Yeah, Portland.
Okay. Palm Coast Blue Ways paddling guy.
Hot off the presses. I got these last week, and I got
paddling guy. Huh? Isn't that nice?
This is
thank you.
Something we've been wanting to do for a long time, and we also have signage up now along Long Creek.
Hey,
so if you go out from your kayak, from the kayak launch there, you'll see recycled plastic signs showing you which way to turn so you don't get lost back in there and you can find your way to Bing's Landing on the Intercoastal. And we're going to be putting QR codes on the QR codes at the launch of the kayak thing at Long Creek, you know, giving other information like a map of the thing so that you can have it on your phone and you can kind of see where you're going.
It'll
have information on the tides, which is very important, you know, so that you don't get caught at low tide, and other things, you know, that we'll be putting on there. So that isn't quite up to speed yet, but it will
this
be.
Is good.
It's very well done.
Good.
So Carol Minnie worked on this a lot,
yeah.
And Denise helped her. And
this is excellent, especially for having it in places where tourists may see it, people coming to the area. I think it's another incentive for people who want recreational and enjoy the environment.
Yeah, we went outside the city too, you know, talking about Herschel Cave Park, Fall Creek Preserve, River Seat Preserve, Gamble Rogers.
Russell. Again.
I think she kind of coordinated with the county too, and making this possible. I've got some more here if anybody wants an extra copy for somebody.
That's
good.
Good for me.
Yeah. So that was all,
man. Okay. No, I think that's good. One thing I didn't see that might have been helpful, this is not that you would reprint that, but it's just that, and maybe I missed it here, but it didn't seem like, you know, which we could have some commercial guys who rent canoes or kayaks. Well, I guess you do have it here, wouldn't you?
Yeah, tropical tide.
I missed that. I was looking at the sites earlier. Okay. Oh, it is here, so that's good.
Yeah.
I got the Gamble Rogers. Okay. Atlantic Water Sports. Oh, no, that's super. Cool. I missed that first time. Okay.
So it's about the monofilament recycling thing. So
yeah, I saw that.
What is that? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Very good.
Yep, I think that's excellent work. Good.
Keep going. And these are available.
Probably have them at the community center. You can get them here.
Okay. Good.
We'll may even have a kiosk out at the Long Creek. You know, once we get our kiosk, we're going to be building out there where we can put information like that in there and keep it stocked.
Good. Super. By the way, if you have anything that you want handed out, I have to September 15th at the Food Truck Tuesday. The library is having a booth there that we're handing out stuff as part of our. Because we received a cultural grant, we participate in an event. But we're going to have a tent and a table, and we're handing out stuff. So if there's anything for the city,
you
can hand that out too. It's going to be Tuesday, September 15th. And we're, a lot of library stuff I'm handing out at the booth. And I think, when I saw this, I was thinking, well, anything that you'd like us to have available for people, we can hand out.
I'll put it here. And
very good.
I'll let you know. Thanks.
Right, yeah.
We have to make an adjustment in the October meeting.
Yes. We will not be... Well, we won't... It's... we won't be here. We are moving to our new city hall. but the new City Hall chambers will not be ready. So once it is ready, you guys are going to be uptown. You're going to be have a very fancy place to have your meetings. So we have an option of moving it to Thursday, the 22nd of October at the Community Center.
It's already scheduled for the 22nd, so that would be the same.
What's that?
I said it's already scheduled for
right,
the
right.
Center.
But, yeah, we'll
just be
the same
Community
date.
Center.
The date after that wasn't available.
Right.
We have the option of canceling the meeting if you all like, or, you know, having it there.
I would say because we don't do the November one, and we kind of do the early December one instead.
Right.
And I'd probably prefer not to cancel it.
Yeah, we've got a big gap there.
Yeah.
That's
so let's,
kind of way
let's
I
go
feel.
With the Community Center.
Yeah, I'm fine with 22nd.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Same time?
Yeah, 5 o'clock.
So then the meetings after that will be in the new?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, starts November.
So starting in the December.
So you all agree to that then?
Yeah. 22nd, Community Center, 5 p.m.
All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I went into the new City Hall and saw the chambers. They're really, really going to be nice. Yeah. We're doing the landscaping now right there. The trees are coming in. And
what is it?
It's starting to really, really shape up. There's a lot of, I am just going crazy, like capital projects. Everything now, the landscaping said, if you noticed on Pompous Parkway, the trees are going in on that now.
Yeah.
And the City Hall, the trees
yeah.
are going
yeah.
in now.
Yeah, the ponds over by Boulder Rock or right at the entrance to Walmart, they were landscaping that just the other day, this week.
Yeah, yeah.
They were
uh-huh.
doing it. It looks really nice. It
yeah.
looks really, it looked really bad for a while,
yeah.
a long time now. But it's looking really nice.
Yeah, and our medians on 100, they're going to be probably planting trees next month on that. So it involves me going out a lot on these jobs.
Yeah.
Like every day I've got to go out. And then, of course, the island walk, too. The first stage of that, it's getting its landscaping now, too.
Wow.
So we're getting a lot of green in the city now.
Yeah.
It looks,
it looks
incredible. Really
good. Established before winter time.
It's a good, more fodder for the people complaining about trees. And I went to the meeting about the pool closing at Belterre, and one woman said, yeah, if we didn't put those trees in, we could have money for the pool. I said,
ooh.
And I said, it just doesn't work that way. You know? It does,
oh.
you can't, it just
what
doesn't work
that way.
She's watching
on TV. What's
with these people that hate trees?
No, they just,
it's not a hatred of trees. It's the trade-off. So
no,
they think
because so many people they just
think it will come from one
they,
pot.
They hate the trees and they hate you know having to clean up after them or
well,
whatever.
Well, in Grand Haven, right?
We're having a real issue going on there.
There's a symposium next week
yes.
about that about
yeah.
their street trees, and the city staff's going to be there to you know tell about what we require and
right.
you know versus what they and they actually got a very notable speaker Ed Gelman. Used to here in Michigan, Florida. He's probably one of the nation's foremost experts on trees and how they grow and you know proper way to plant and prune and all that. So it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. I know he's going to say one thing. He's going to say that you know it's too small of a planting space between the sidewalk and the
right.
street. You know.
Yes.
So, but that's the way Grand Haven was laid out, and we're having to live with it.
The trees on Old Kings Road. Palm
yeah.
Coast Parkway,
right.
uh-huh.
going north, those trees in the median, they're going to stay there?
Oh, right there by Wendy's and ABC?
Yeah.
No.
No, because it looked like the way the concrete was laid out,
for
it
now.
Was going around there.
For now. Yeah,
for now.
When they do the four laning, they have to go. In fact, we even looked at relocating them,
okay.
and there's a 16-inch water main directly underneath those trees.
I remember
and,
you said that.
And utility
yeah.
doesn't want to take a chance. That water lane main gets damaged, half of Palm Coast won't have water. So
what's going to happen? Are they going to just cut it down and then go pave over it? I mean, they're going to pull the stump out.
Well,
right?
yeah, they'll pull the stump out, but and they can do that, I guess, easier than they can than spading it. Putting a spade down and then they can cut something. And,
I get it. Yeah.
But, again, there will be a lot of trees on that project, too. I hate to lose those trees because those are really not nice sitting in the shade while you're stopped at the
yeah.
light.
Oh, absolutely.
And then
bend
your
light.
Well, trees are easy to see and easy to complain about. You know, there they are. They weren't there before. That's money. And it's too bad that people focus on that.
But they should consider that trees also give you a lot of, not only shade and sunlight, but they also give you a lot of good oxygen
yeah.
and filter.
It's all good.
I know the cycle.
I know you do. Yeah.
Okay, public is done. Discussion not on the agenda.
I have a short item.
Trouble.
Bill, can you put this up on the screen? I've got a little on this, yeah. My little flash drive here. It has to do with what we were discussing last week about the swales, and in my neighborhood, and I had kind of, I'm in my travels around the neighborhood and my bike riding, I see a lot of the swales, and I thought it might be helpful just real quickly to look at, so I went out and took some pictures of them the other day, and I think if we looked at some of them, maybe we could maybe get a little different look than what we were talking about last week.
Well, it's coming up. I'll say this, that I'll give credit, probably in a different direction than he's headed, to the people who were here, because they came out last week and cleaned the waterways, and it's not really a swale, but the huge waterways that we talked about, the guy who had sent us the pictures and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right.
He was extremely happy with it. He brought me in new pictures, showed that they cut it down by hand, because they didn't have the equipment. They cut it all down by hand, all the bad grasses and all that, but they left the natural plants and the reeds that were there, and he was extremely happy with it, and he was very happy that the city of Palm Coast took such quick action to come out and fix it after he sent those pictures in.
Mm-hmm. So, good.
FYI.
Good. Excellent.
Yeah.
Consider changing your password.
I know.
I only have 65 passwords for different places.
Oh, my God.
I have them in a very secure place on a bulletin board above the computer.
I'm just going to say, that's the exact same thing. I have a big list right by the computer.
I know.
I never can remember them all.
Who's a very good hacker.
Yeah.
And that's his job at Yale University, is to protect the university. And he said to me, you know, I could go into your computer right now and I could find your passwords for everything.
Is this it here?
No, that was scary.
That's not it.
Oh, yes. Let's see. Let me scan a picture and move up with this. There it is.
It's the Swales 2015. PowerPoint.
Okay. I haven't done a PowerPoint since I got stopped teaching.
I did one every week for 10 years. this is what I call neighborhood swales. This is right around the corner from my house. There's a home on the left, and this is I think you would call it a wet swale. There's an empty lot is on the right. We can go to the next one. This is the same location, just a little closer. It's a bit overgrown. It's on the side of the home that's there. And then we can go to the next one. Now this is across the street, the other direction. There's empty lots on both sides. So this is pretty overgrown. And then keep going. This is in a neighborhood. There's lots of homes on both sides. This is the backyard. It's on a side street on the right-hand side. That's the back, and on the side of the home on the left. So this is the area between them. And I just thought it's like a brush row. You can barely even tell that there's any water in there, but it's wet. Let me go to the next one. This is the same one, just a little bit different view. So you can see that's about the extent of where they're going to cut, because it gets wet. It goes down pretty quick after that.
Now, Jeff, who's supposed to maintain those?
The city does.
The city does?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, the homeowners, they mow, as close as they can get.
Yeah, I've seen some homeowners go all the way to the bottom. You know, people in my neighborhood, one of my neighbors, that we have one like that, and one neighbor mows to the bottom, the other mows to the bottom. If they keep after it, It's yeah. not that hard to do.
Well, go to the next one. The next one is one on the next street, and this is again, that no, a back, this one here.
Is that a pipe there?
Yeah, that's a pipe. And that is, again, the back of another house on the right-hand side in the side over here. So they planted a hedgerow, and the fellow that's on the side lot on the left-hand side, they, I guess, mow it all the way to the...
Wherever they can get to.
Right, to the edge, because you can see the water is in there all the way. It runs to the canal. And the next one after this?
I guess that's one option. If you don't like looking at that, plant a hedge and... You don't see it.
That's what they did.
But you get a lot of like snakes and stuff in there?
That was the one guy's fear that he said he was getting snakes and rats and stuff like that.
But
I don't know about the rats because they need a more of a forested area as opposed to a small distance. But snakes, I have a ditch on the side and the back and the canal, and there's a 4-acre green belt behind our home, and we get some snakes, but very few. We get the racers, we get the corn snakes, we get some water moccasins, I must say. But it's not a lot of snakes. Anyway, this is what I think could be about the best case scenario. This is has got the trees planted, and it's got this wax myrtle that's next, and it goes down, there's a palm. It's on one side, and then you can go to the next one. This is what I think is probably about the best that you could get there's the wet swale, and it's all landscaped into his property. Now there's cattails growing in there, and there's some of the pickerel weed, there's a number of the wet site plants. I think it looks very nice myself, so that's what I thought, just as an idea of what could be done with the situation as it is, but
it doesn't look like a swale from here.
No, that was pretty good.
I was hoping you can get the words to kind of float in.
Jesus.
So they always get the thing at the little box at the top, you know.
Well, the swale that's on Palm Coast Parkway between Boulder Rock and the southbound on ramp, our plans for the 6-lane called that to be sodded. And Jane has brought this up before because we've had some nice wetland plants grow in there. It looked really with the purple flowers. Since they've graded it, weeds and things are coming up, but we are getting some nice literal plants in there, but it's mixed with all this other stuff. Yeah. So I've asked the contractor to get a price. They had a wetlands planting company come and take a look at it, and he's got a plan he's putting together on spraying out the bad stuff and replanting with good stuff thick enough that it'll keep the bad stuff out, and look attractive at the same time. But we're looking at doing the pond on the other side, the east side of 95, on the north side of the road. There's a pond there that's only about this deep, so it's going to get cattails and all this other stuff, unless we plant some other stuff in with it to kind of help crowd that out. So
I think in an area like that, to me it doesn't, whatever grows in there, it seems to be fine. If it's natural Florida, if we can put, cattails actually look nice in there.
I like the cattails.
And I think if it's, I think this whole issue when it came up with this fellow is only because it's more like this, where it's near a house, not a retention pond, where it's near a home, and he was concerned about it, And I agree, there's other things you can do, but you have to also listen to the public out there and what they're saying sometimes, and in this case, like I said, he's very happy at this point. But I agree with you, this looks real good. I mean, if I had that, I wouldn't be bothered by it at all.
What did he say?
These are mowed what, 3-4 times a year?
Twice a year.
And he said that they had to, if it's wet like the ones that this guy had, that they're wet. They really don't have the equipment to do it. They have to do it by manually, and that's what this guy said. He grabbed hold of me last week. Said they did a wonderful job. They came right out and they hand did it. He said they did a great job.
I know they get the prison crews doing them too.
I don't know if that's what they use, but he was very happy with it at least. So you wanted me to pass that on at least.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought to show that to the group because I saw that on my bike ride last week. And I said, that looks really nice.
Absolutely.
And it gives them a lot of privacy.
Oh, yeah. It definitely, especially the cattails in there.
Yeah.
And it's all natural. It's not like putting up with sight. You can't put sight.
You would never know that there was anything in there other than the look that it has.
Yeah. So that's good.
Well, we're lucky to have you, Bill, to work so hard to see these little jobs get done in the proper way.
Yeah, and I was really impressed with Brian. I mean, he is excellent.
Very informative. And
very impressed.
That was very good to bring it up because that's not a subject matter that we've covered before. So I thought that was very interesting.
I'm concerned about it, just like you were talking about how much, and we're talking about how when do we stop? It's an issue.
It is.
It's a thought.
Concern.
You know, 2035, 2040, well, I don't know. Where we'll be,
I'll be buried under one of those swells with the cattails growing.
Yep.
Of illegally dumping my remains.
Yeah, right.
That's my plan. Well, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Anybody else has anything?
Okay.
Aye.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.